So we're 2020 visioning yet again this morning as it comes up on the screen. Sanitize it now. Okay, I'll carry on, don't worry. So we've been looking at 2020 vision, and this morning I thought it was good, as we are going to be taking communion together, just to focus our thinking on the cross. In 30 days about, the world will have been overtaken by chocolate and chicks. And when I Googled Easter as an image, it took me a long while down the Googling photographs before it ever showed any picture of Jesus. It had chicks coming out of eggs, it had Easter baskets, it had Easter gardens, and it was very little to do with what I believe Easter is all about. Because the cross is... Ooh. I want to show my picture of the chicken coming out of the egg. Ooh. Don't touch anybody while I'm talking, all right? Just keep your distance. Do you remember in the olden days when you used to have the overhead projector? Yeah, and the bulb used to ping at just that moment when all you'd written something with your acetate pen and you put your arm on and it all smudged all the... Well, this is the 21st version of the light bulb going moment, and it's decided to crash. Well, I'm going to carry on. Don't worry about my pictures. I shouldn't rely on PowerPoint. Point to self. I don't. The cross is central to Christianity, central to our discipleship. You can't have a faith without both the manger and the cross. At this point, picture on wall, it's my favourite picture forever, is of the manger with the cross. Ooh. Oh, that blessed man running across the beach again. You three gurus at the back, could you just give me a signal like it's on its way, it's not happening, we're washing our hands of everything. Oh, Mike has got... You see, Mike's glass is half full. He's done that. Dennis and Leslie are into... Oh. This is looking promising, folks. What I meant to say earlier on, I could do this now, is that Kerry got hold of me yesterday, which I thought was lovely, and I forgot to mention it earlier, Kerry. You know, she said, our generation... That makes you young. We're not at risk as much, so we would like to help the seniors in any way that they can. And I said, well, I will talk to Marion later, because she's just verging on nearly. So at the end of the service, you know, if you know anybody, it doesn't have to be, they don't have to come to church. If you know anybody that the younger generation can help by doing their shopping, you know, putting on the doorstep and running, or whatever it is, then please let's make sure as a community, church community, we look outside of these worlds. This is what Lent, looking out in the community, is all about. So Kerry will be by the counter, and Marion as well, and we'll get a team of people sorting that out. Also, I meant to say earlier, at 12:30, we're circling the town with prayer. And obviously, that's great because it's in isolation. You don't need to touch anybody while you pray. And so, you know, at the deacons' meeting on Wednesday, I said I was a bit disappointed that only 15 people out of a congregation this size have signed up. And bless her, Linda says... She says they're going to sign up on Sunday, Mandy. They're all lastminute.com. So the things are out there. I've left a little note alongside that to give you an aid to prayer, but it'd be great to think that all of those slots were covered in prayer at 12:30 to 12:45. Even more so now that we can be proactive as Christians in against all the fear and the worry. Don't worry, Chris. Where are you? Because we'll make sure we get some bread and milk to you. Okay. How are we doing? No. Is that because you fiddled under the counter this morning, Martin Cody? Okay, I'm going to carry on. Don't worry. Let me see. The cross wasn't an accident. The cross wasn't plan B or C or D in God's mind. The cross was always on the cards. In Isaiah we read, "Yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer." And Jesus himself knew that the cross wasn't an accident. He knew the cross was looming all the way through his ministry. We read in Mark, it says, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." And then we read in Luke, "As the time approached for him to be taken up to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem." When you're resolute about something, you're focused and you're fixed. Jesus always knew that the cross was going to be part of God's plan. Everything that led up to the cross, Jesus knew about. Crosses were a big thing in Roman culture. They littered the hillside. Crucifixion was something that was part and parcel of daily life in Rome. It was the way that you were punished for crime. So Jesus' cross was just one of many, many on the side of that hill. But as we know, that cross was different. That cross was totally unique, because on that cross hung the Son of God, Emmanuel, Saviour, our God. And there's so many different angles to thinking about the cross that we could look at this morning. You see, look up at that cross now. Look at our cross, designed brilliantly. When the schools come in, secondary schools, I can flip the lights so it flashes all different colours, and they go away and they go, "Oh, that church, they got a disco cross." But you look at it, and sometimes we can just take the cross for granted. We see it, we look at that cross, and we see God's love. We look at that cross and we see the price that was paid for my sin, your sin, my guilt, your sin. But I don't want us just to look at the cross this morning. Because this morning, yes! Oh. Let me just, can I click? Yeah, because they're looking a bit bored. There you go. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that because I thought I chose a good one. Thank you, guys. There we go. See, I love that image. I use it a lot at Christmas. But I love it because to me it speaks. Yeah, okay, where am I? We see God's amazing love. We see the price of sin. But on this morning, I don't want us just to look at the cross. I want us to hear what Jesus said. But some very profound things as he hung on that cross. On the cross, do we hear Jesus' compassion to forgive? Picture the scene. All those thousands of years ago. Crowds of people just crowding in on that innocent man. Some would have been gawking, thinking, what's going on here? Because this is like no other crucifixion. Some of the true followers of Jesus, who had been touched by his life and ministry, they would have been there thinking, what's really going on here? But also there would have been the soldiers. You know, for those soldiers, this crucifixion was like any other crucifixion. They'd probably done loads of them that week. And in many ways, they'd become emotionless and almost no feeling about this one. But amidst that scene, the gawking, the followers, the soldiers, amidst that scene comes these amazing words from Jesus. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Wow. 12 words of just immense power, but also personal. Jesus says, Father, to show that he had that relationship with God. It was an Aramaic word that was Abba or Daddy. Jesus had taken all that emotional and physical torture. He'd had those nails dug into his hands. And he could, on that cross, he could say, Father, forgive them. Doesn't that give you goosebumps up your spine? He looks down and he says that. You see, Jesus had every right to pray, Father, judge them. Father, just sort them out. Give them as good as they've given me. But he didn't. He prays out of a heart of compassion. He says, forgive them. He says, forgive them because they don't know. Them. Who are the them? The them could have been Pilate, because after all, he was the one that ticked the box and said, crucify him, even though he found Jesus innocent. Maybe Jesus was forgiving Pilate for being a bit weak-willed. The them could have been the chief priests and the scribes who had been prime movers behind the crucifixion. Maybe Jesus was forgiving them for paying off Judas and for stirring up the crowd. But in one commentator that I read this week said, the them could be you and me. We are the ones that go about our life our way and not God's. And we too need to hear that forgiveness from the cross. But not only does Jesus pray for their forgiveness, but he justifies their actions. He says, for they do not know what they are doing. Father, my people just don't understand. They're ignorant. Please would you forgive their ignorance. Amazing. And let's be honest. How easy do we find it to pray, Father, forgive them? I know I certainly don't find it easy, and I certainly didn't find it easy when some defender was launching into my legs with a hockey stick, and that's just a trivial illustration. We've all got situations, people that we just need to forgive. And Jesus was only living out what he taught us. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Father, forgive them. Not an easy prayer to pray. But Jesus showed that it was a possible prayer to pray even when he was hanging on a cross. Something for us to ponder and hear from Jesus this morning. But on the cross, we hear Jesus' outrageous grace. Picture the scene. The crowd around the cross, mocking and jeering Jesus. The rulers there are antagonistic and they're saying caustic comments. And there are two criminals either side of Jesus who have committed serious offences, who have rebelled against Rome. And one of them hurls insults to Jesus, but the other one says, "We're getting what we deserve. This man has done nothing wrong." And then he comes out with this very interesting statement. He says, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom. Remember me." The religious authorities were mocking Jesus' kingship. They were saying he wasn't the king. But there was a criminal who had done wrong acknowledging Jesus' kingship. "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." To me, that was a bit of a woo moment. And Jesus turns to that guy and he says, "Truly I say to you, I tell you today, you will be with me in paradise." The word paradise there is a Greek version of the word for the Garden of Eden. So there was that promise. Despite being the ultimate victim, Jesus retains his authority and he can promise, "You will be with me in paradise." We don't read, "Hopefully, mate, you might be," or "Maybe, possibly, you will be." Jesus is able to make that definite promise. To meet the penitent thief, Jesus had to hang on the cross beside him. He didn't say, "Today I am with you on Calvary," but "Today you will be with me in paradise." He was a proven criminal, deserved to be punished. Our response would be, "That's not fair, Jesus. He should get what he deserves." No, it's not. It's Jesus' outrageous grace. On the cross, do we hear for ourselves that same words, Jesus' outrageous grace? Something for us to ponder and hear this morning. And then thirdly, on the cross, we hear Jesus' trust and commitment. Jesus says, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Do you notice that all of these words of Jesus on the cross had just this very definite confidence, affirming what was going to happen? There's not an ounce of doubt in Jesus' mind. He says, "Father, into your hands I commit your spirit," with conviction and certainty, no doubting. And also we read it was with a loud voice. Here Jesus was dying, and being able to say something with a loud voice must show us that it was God. It's a prayer of intimacy. Again, we read, "Father." It's a prayer of trust. "I commit." That means to actually put something into the safekeeping of somebody else. And it's a prayer of surrender. On the cross, Jesus was surrendering without any doubt to his Abba Father, who he totally trusted. Here is a little reminder. On the cross, do we hear Jesus' trust and commitment? On the cross, we hear Jesus' compassion in forgiveness. On the cross, we hear Jesus' outrageous grace. And on the cross, we hear Jesus' trust and commitment. One day, a man went to visit a church And he arrived early, he parked his car, and he got out. Another car pulled up near him, and the driver told him, "I always park there. You took my place." The visitor went inside for adult Sunday school. The visitor went inside for adult Sunday school, found an empty seat, and sat down. A young lady from the church approached him and stated, "That's my seat. You took my place." The visitor was somewhat distressed by the rude welcome, but said nothing. After adult Sunday school, the visitor went into the church sanctuary and sat down. Another member walked up to him and said, "That's where I sit. You took my place." Later, as the congregation was praying for Christ to dwell among them, the visitor stood up and his appearance began to change. Horrible scars became visible on his hands and his feet. Someone from the congregation noticed him and said, "What happened to you?" The visitor replied, "I took your place." As we think about the cross and all the different images, let's remember that Jesus took our place. And we're going to listen to a piece of music now. So just close your eyes and enjoy the words.
My strength indeed is small, child of weakness, watch and pray. Find in me thine all in all.
Just heard be our personal testimony this morning. Thank you for the cross. Thank you that you paid the price for each one of us so we might know your presence, your peace, and we might know the promise of paradise. Lord, it's not easy to pray for forgiveness when other people have hurt us. But we just take that time now just to ask you to help us to forgive. And we thank you for your outrageous grace. Thank you for the cross, that you are the champion of heaven. Amen. We're going to stand as we sing, "Thank you for the cross, Lord."